Good morning. It's special to be with you this morning. I am really enjoying spring weather and it has been pretty warm, but the signs of spring and coming to church this morning and seeing the wisteria and going back to my mom and dad's place and robbing their flowers. It's really been beautiful. I want us to think about the Lord being our shepherd this morning. And I thought a good place to start would be with that psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd." So if you will turn to Psalm 23. I thought maybe we'd actually say it together. And so I'll be reading from the New King James Version. If you don't have that, just kind of approximate it, and it'll be close enough. Say this together for those of you who are suits to stand. All right. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house forever." You may be seated. A lot of people appreciate this psalm, and for good reasons, very comforting. It's a beautiful psalm. I love it. But there are some concepts in this psalm that can be a bit of a challenge for us to deal with. And I think a lot of people, if they really looked closely at this, a lot of people who say they love it maybe would find some objections to certain things in this psalm. For one thing, it says, "You are a sheep." And if you think of yourself, if you think more of yourself than you ought to, that can be a problem, because sheep are not very clever or self-sufficient. The psalm says, "The Lord can be." And if you think less of yourself and you think you have no value, then that can be a problem. That can be something to struggle with, that the Lord would actually be interested in being your shepherd. This psalm suggests that the shepherd's going to put you, more than likely, is going to put you in some uncomfortable situations. And this can be a problem if you think God should be comfortable or should just want you to be comfortable. This psalm says the shepherd has a purpose for you that is greater than just you. He says his name's sake. And this can be a problem if you think it should be all about you. And the whole thing is built on a kind of difficult truth, really, backing this whole psalm. And I'll talk about it in terms of an interaction I had lately with one of our chickens. I'll move this mic up a tad. So a month or two ago, I was putting away the chickens. I'm not sure why I was doing it, not Sophie or Grayson, but I was herding them back inside the chicken coop, was the goal, and where they would be safe and sheltered, and it was a good place for them to be. All of them were back in except for one, not only outside of the coop, but was outside of the run, the fenced-in area. And it was on the wrong side of the fence, and also on the opposite side from where the entrance was. So I was just trying to herd it around. This was just going to herd it around to the other side of the fence. But this chicken, this little hen, was just fixated on the fence right in front of it and kept running back and forth. So if I would go to the left, it would go, it would look like we're making progress, but then when we get over there, it would turn around and run back to where it was before. Like, I mean, there was no way through that fence. It was fairly basic, the problem, but it's fixated on surely. There's a way through this fence right here. This is the way. It was not the way. So it burnt a lot of energy and was wasting time and probably getting stressed out and probably also definitely did not realize that I was trying to get it to a good place. It's just over there, not over here, and the way to safety is over there. Eventually, we got there, and I put the chicken away. And I was thinking about it. I wasn't too frustrated with the chicken, just a little bit. But I was thinking, you know, that this is probably how it looks to God sometimes, just trying to get us over to, it's not that complicated to him. That complicated to us, they look incredibly hard sometimes. Just, you mean I have to go over there? Yeah. And so the difficult part of Psalm 23, the part that we can struggle with, is simply that the Lord is the shepherd and he needs to lead us. For us to experience all the beauty of the psalm, we have to accept that he is the shepherd and he ought to be leading. He must lead. We need the authority of the good shepherd. Now, I want us to do a little case study this morning of the shepherd trying to lead a struggling saint. You'll probably find parts of this relatable. I do. My hope is that as we look with how God worked with this saint and how he got him to a good place, will help us to say yes when the shepherd. So this study is based on the call of Moses. You can start turning to Exodus chapter 3. Moses has been in the wilderness for 40 years. He's about 80 years old. Some people talk about this time in the wilderness as his wilderness school. And you would think that maybe at 80, he would be ready to go and just, you know, he's reached the pinnacle now, and he has learned what he needs to learn, and he's ready to follow God wherever. Well, I think he was ready to do a lot of things for God. The problem was this. And we'll see that, you know, Moses had some things to work on, even at 80 years old. I don't know if that's encouraging or discouraging. We'll start reading here in Exodus chapter 3 at verse 10. This very familiar. All the details of this story. But of course, Moses saw the burning bush. God is talking to Moses out of the burning bush, saying, I've heard the cries, and I'm going to send you to Egypt. Verse 10. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? So let's stop and think about this for a minute. It's Moses' question. Now, when Stephen retells the story of Moses in Acts chapter 7 or something, and he says about Moses, about the period of time, 40 years earlier, he was in Egypt. He says, Moses was a man mighty of words and deeds. That's what Stephen said about Moses. And Moses saw himself as a deliverer for the Israelites, getting them out of Egypt. Time to deliver them. And I feel like Moses maybe back then thought too much of himself. And maybe at this point, when he's asking the who am I question, I wonder if he's almost in the other ditch and he feels like he is just and unusable. And neither of these ditches is really the right place or really even the right question. You see how God answers this? He says, I will certainly be with you. That's in verse 12. And so who am I can be a good question for us to ask ourselves. But I don't think it's the most important question. I think a better question is to ask, who am I with? Who is leading me? Whose authority am I under? And sometimes we get stuck on this who am I question and don't think enough about, am I operating under the authority of the shepherd? What I'm doing because I belong to the shepherd and I'm following him and I want to do what he wants. That's, you know, if you ask who am I without thinking about that aspect, it changes everything. Okay, so let's go on to the second stage here. The first stage was who am I? The next stage is what shall I say? Verse 13. When I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? This is a valid question. It's been 400 years. Israel's memory is probably getting a little fuzzy. Who is this? Which God? Who is it? This is a valid question, but it's also the beginning of a theme. And we're going to see this theme repeated. The theme is Moses is worried about saying the wrong thing, messing up, getting stumped, not having the answers. You know, they're going to come back at me with a question I can't answer or not answer very well, and it's just going to fall apart. So God replies to Moses in verse 14. You tell them, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. What happens in the rest of chapter 3? We're going to move on to chapter 4 here in a second. But what happens in the rest of chapter 3 is God gives an outline for the plan. I don't think God usually doesn't give this much detail, I don't feel like, to people. But in this case, he gives Moses an outline of what's going to happen. He said, when you get to Egypt, you're going to gather the elders. You're going to tell them God has to bring you up out of Egypt. And God says, they will listen. Then you'll go to Pharaoh, but he won't let you go. In essence, he won't listen. And then I'll strike wonders, and finally Pharaoh will send you out, but you won't go empty-handed. You'll go out having plundered Egypt because of all the hard things and the struggle that had to happen before you could go out. So that's just a summary of the plan. Now let's jump to chapter 4. Exodus 4, verse 1. This is when it begins to feel a bit like a struggle. Moses is worried that God hasn't actually thought of everything. So Exodus 4, verse 1. But suppose they will not believe. Or suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose the Lord has not appeared to you. Do you see a theme here? Again, it's back to his voice again and how they're going to respond to the things he tells them. And he's worried about failure and he's worried about persuasive enough. And so God gives him the three signs. I don't feel like God was obligated to do this at this point. But he does give him the three signs, and Moses does two of them, of course, and sees him for himself. It is a little ironic to me that God gave Moses these signs that were supposed to help Israel believe and accept the call, but for Moses, it didn't seem like it helped a whole lot at this point. Now let's go to verse 10. We've skipped past the signs, and we're getting to the next stage in this struggle. And Moses is really zeroing in on his difficulty, his perceived. I wonder if it's a little bit like the Wizard of Oz sometimes. You know, the scarecrow who didn't have any brains, and the tin man who didn't have a heart, and the lion who didn't have any courage, and Moses. I'm not even sure how much his concern was valid. Well, I know it wasn't, but. Okay, verse 10 here in Exodus 4. Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent. Before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say. Telling God, I have a problem. My tongue is slow. It's heavy. That's literally what he's saying. I have a heavy tongue. It's got mechanical problems. Doesn't move like it should, and good answers don't. And God says, I made it. Made that tongue, the tongue that you have. I made the mute and the deaf and the blind and the seeing, and including Moses' tongue. It's a problem that we sheep have. At least I can relate to this. That we keep thinking we're going to surprise the shepherd. You know, he's going to take us down a path, and there's going to be a stream. He's going to be surprised when he finds out we can't jump that stream. You know, he hadn't thought of it. We get there, and it's too big for us to jump. We can't jump. We're sheep that can't jump. And he's prepared for that. But he made us, and so he knows to the inch how far we can jump. If he needs to carry us across the stream or create a bridge or stop the water, he can do what is necessary. He already knows about the limitations and the perceived limitations. Verse 13. But he said, oh, my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron your brother? I know that he can speak well. God is angry, but he makes a concession, and Moses now is ready to go. And I'm being a little hard on Moses, and I don't really mean to be. I'm just pointing out this struggle that is common to all of us. And I will say this for Moses. He went. You know, just having Aaron didn't make this, I think, like, oh, now he's all excited about going to Egypt. I think it was still an exercise in faith for him to go. So it's good that he went. It would have been better if he had not argued so much and forced this concession. He didn't force it, but I want us to look ahead and see how much better off Moses was now that he had Aaron for his mouthpiece. So I'm going to read a lot of just verses here. You don't have to turn to these. First is Exodus 4:30. And Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. Then he did the signs in the sight of the people. So the people believed. And maybe Moses thought, look at Aaron. He's such a smooth talker. I knew we needed him. Exodus 5:2. And he said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. And by the way, now you have to gather your own straw for brick making. Exodus 5:21, the officers of the children of Israel came to Moses and Aaron and said, Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hands. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? Exodus 6:9. This is where he affirms that, yes, he is actually going to do this. He is going to bring Israel out. So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. Exodus 6:28-30. And it came to pass, on the day the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I am the Lord, speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. But Moses said before the Lord, Behold, I am of uncircumcised lips, and how shall Pharaoh heed me? Wouldn't that be terrible if he didn't? Exodus 7:13. And Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, as the Lord had said. Exodus 7:22. Then the magicians of Egypt did enchantments, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, as the Lord had said. Exodus 8:15. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart, heed them, as the Lord had said. Exodus 8:18. But Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had said. Exodus 9:12. But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses. It's hard to see how any of the things that Moses was concerned about and stressed out about were made better by having Aaron for a mouthpiece. In fact, they were part of the plan, and having Aaron didn't change that. And what made the mission successful was God and not Aaron. Sometimes the things we really need are just not that relevant. And our objections don't make God's plan better. In fact, I think God had a role for Aaron either way, but I do wonder if there were some to Aaron having this role of being Moses' mouthpiece. I don't think our objections make God's plans better. If he has to adjust them for us, I don't think they were adjustment. So let's kind of recap this case study. The shepherd had a call for Moses. It was scary to Moses. It was a very scary call. It would have been scary to me for sure. But it was a good call. It was good for Moses. It was good for God's people and God's purpose and his name. Moses was not the wrong man. God did not call the wrong man. Moses was sure God had dialed the wrong man. And I'm thinking a little bit about the incident that happened between me and Naaman a couple years ago. You remember this? I got a phone call early in the morning, and the person was just upset because, was it the scale? The scale wasn't working at Long Island Lumber, and he was telling me about this problem. And after about the first paragraph, I said, I'd love to help you, but I think you actually want Gabriel, not Galen. Me and Gabriel tend to be close together in the contacts list, I guess, and I'm happy about that, but it was the wrong number. We had a good laugh about that. God does not do that. He doesn't call the wrong people. He's very patient. But Moses could not get past the fear that he would mess things up. In fact, you could say his objections were trouble. His objections Well, they didn't mess things up, but they frustrated God. And then he had Aaron as a mouthpiece. And I'm not sure if that was a good thing. And he did go. So I want to move into some applications here. And I first want to think about, what does the shepherd's call look like? Okay, we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about responding to it. So the shepherd's call, you call Moses, we think about some, maybe the most, the things that fit the best are like service opportunities, working on the mission field, maybe leadership, going to leadership ministry or whatever. We think about those kinds of calls, and that's a good thing for us to think about, because there's a pretty close, a lot of parallels you could draw there. Things that are scary and difficult that God might be calling you. It could be some more everyday things, like reaching out to someone. Could be giving up something. It could be confessing a failure. It could be about something you've been dealing with. It could be just being obedient to a teaching of his that you don't really care for. Or maybe he's just calling us to stay in whatever role we've already got. Maybe that's his call. And as a parent or as a leader, as a teacher, or maybe it's a relationship that you're in, someone you're reaching out to. There are a lot of these things that are difficult, and probably a lot of us never feel like we're good at it and don't feel very capable. But God has us in this role, and we can. So that's kind of exploring the idea of what could the call look like to us this morning. Okay, now let's think about how we can do better at saying yes. And this is something I struggle with. I mean, this is a hard thing sometimes. I even wondered if I should preach this sermon, because I can get worried about things, doing things, and I think if I wasn't scared, I probably would do this. So sermon does not come out of me looking out there and saying, there's a lot of people that need to be saying yes to Jesus more. Because that's probably true. But this is something we all struggle with, and I do definitely. Here's some realizations that we need to make as we think about what God might be calling us to. We need that the shepherd is going to ask us to do things we really don't want to do. Moses was a man of faith. Even at this scene with the burning bush, he was a man of faith. He had chosen God and associate with God's people rather than Egypt. That was a decision he had made long ago. He was a man of faith, a model for us. And I think there were a lot of things he was willing to do for God, but the problem was God wanted him to do something that he did not want to do. And following the shepherd would be pretty easy if this didn't happen, but it does. And so we just need to remember that's how it is. The Lord is my shepherd is not just about green pastures, waters. Sometimes there's a dark valley where we need his comfort. So we should not just automatically dismiss something as, I really don't want to do it, and so I won't. That might be the shepherd's call we're saying no to. Another realization we should make is that there is a cost to making objections. There is a cost to resisting the call. Moses, in this situation, eventually got angry. That's not good. And what if Moses had persisted and just refused to go altogether, had never gone? You could wonder about that. And so God, when the shepherd, he wants to do something good with us. He's concerned about our good. He wants to get us to a good place and do his work. So it's definitely costly to say no to that. would have been. Moses had said yes a lot sooner, but at least he eventually did go. I will say this. So I don't know if this really fits or not, and I wasn't sure if I should talk about this part of the story or quickly say something about it, and you can do with it what you like. So there was a problem. There was something that disqualified Moses for being a leader of Israel. And that was that he had not been keeping the sign of the covenant. He could not lead Israel into a covenant while his own son was not circumcised. Right, this is really important. This was a sign of the covenant. It had been passed down through Abraham, Moses, and Zipporah, both descendants. It's not like they didn't know about this. I don't know what the reason was this didn't happen, but it happened. And I don't know why Moses didn't take care of this right after the burning bush. And eventually there was the encampment and God shows up and they're not ready for God to make this kind of appearance. They were not ready. And when God showed up, there was no discussion about, you know, is this really important? Isn't it the reason why we should do it or shouldn't do it? Does it matter? Does it apply to where we are right here, right now? You know, there was no discussion between Moses and Zipporah about what needed to happen. So that was something that was important. It was a real... and a very significant sign and something that Israel was going to have to do. So... there's a cost to saying no and just to refuse clear commands, and you can do with that what you like. Okay, so that was the second realization. Don't say no to the shepherd. He's trying to get us to a good place. Number three, realize that sin and trouble are normal. And Moses was very upset when things got worse instead of better. It didn't mean God's plan was off track. God's plans include an after that section to them. You'll see one there in Exodus 3:20. He says, after all these bad things happen, then he will let you go. After that, he will let you go. Pharaoh will let you go. 1 Peter 5:10, may the God who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. After you have suffered. Deuteronomy 8, where Moses is talking about the reason for the wilderness journey, and he said it was so that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. So setbacks are normal, and it's to say no to the shepherd's call because a possible setback can be a big mistake if you know, that was actually part of his plan. Last of all, we should really focus should be who am I with and not who am I. And we can really worry this won't work. I'm going to look bad. That's really not the point. The results are actually his problem. In fact, his plan might include us looking bad for a while. Can we handle that? Who am I with? Who's the shepherd? Am I under his authority? Being teachable and leadable is more important. So this morning, Moses has kind of been a negative example for us, but he did go, and his track record is, I would say, going forward, with some exceptions. There were times he complained and he doubted and still struggled. It wasn't just perfection from here on out. But he does say yes to God. You can see him being very concerned about God's name and God's people and God's purpose. This should encourage us. Where Moses ended up with God should encourage us. Listen to what God has to say about Moses in Numbers 12. Hear now, if there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And here's a couple verses from Exodus 33. So the Lord spoke to Moses face as a man speaks to his friend. So the Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. Moses, he didn't write Psalm 23, but I feel like later on he could have written something similar. What he did write from the Song of Moses is this: Give ear, O heaven, I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew. I guess his tongue wasn't feeling so heavy at this point. As raindrops on the tender herb, and as showers on the grass, for I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are justice. A God of injustice, righteous and upright is he. We're truly blessed to have the Lord as our shepherd. It's a wonderful thing. His ways are perfect. So let's say yes to his call.